Thank you very much for the nice introduction, Dr. Kumas, and thank you all of you for coming to my talk. Dr. Kumas introduced, I'm the director of the Center for the Study of Stratification and Inequality in Sendai, and I conducted a large-scale survey in Japan, not only in Japan, but also in Korea and Taiwan in 2005, which is focusing on social stratification and social mobility. So let me give you some results of the project to show you what's going on here in Japan in terms of social stratification, social mobility, and inequality. The title of my talk is this, Stability and the Fluidization of the social stratification system in contemporary Japan. As Dr. Kuma talked about, we have seen a lot of homeless and some people living on the street or in the park. But I would say it's just a part of social stratification in Japan. We missed the upper part of the stratification, and the mass media hasn't reported, because it wouldn't attract the audience. If they broadcast homeless people, many Japanese have sympathy about it. But if they report upper class people still under the protection of some protective institutions in Japan, Japanese wouldn't care about it. So mass media often broadcast lower people, people in the lower class or homeless or unstable workers. But we shouldn't miss the upper part of the stratification system in Japan. So I tried to give you the whole picture of the contemporary Japanese stratification system. So when I started the project, there were two debates which seemingly contradictory on social stratification and inequality in contemporary Japan. The first one is here. Stabilization or immobilization or bifurcation. You may have read the book by Toshiki Sato. The title of the book is Unequal Society, Japan, Fubyodo Shakai in Japan. And he argued that there's an increase in intergenerational immobility of professionals and managers. In terms of intergenerational mobility, which means specialists in social mobility often make a table, which is called a mobility table. So comparing check the association of fathers' occupations and children's occupations. So if you look at the association of professionals, then you see a strong association between fathers and sons. So if your fathers are professionals, chances are you get a job in professional occupations. However, the strength of association had declined from since 1955 down to 1995. However, Toshiki Sato pointed out increase in the strength of association in 1995. So he wrote a book on this immobility, intergenerational immobility of professionals and managers. In addition to that, Toshiaki Tachibanaki, a former professor of economics at Kyoto University, also published a very well-known book. It's called Keizai Kakusa or something, published by the Iwanami Shoten, a very small book, but it make a big hit. And he argued that Japan has entered a phase of increasing inequality of income. And we should be careful about the difference between them. Toshiki Sato, a sociologist, points out increase in inequality of opportunities. So to getting a job is a kind of opportunity. However, Professor Tachibanaki talks about inequality of results. So income is a result of social and economic activities. So sociologists are more interested in inequality of opportunities, while economists are interested in inequality of results. So anyway, apart from such a difference, both of them pointed out increasing inequality in Japan in terms of intergenerational mobility or inequality of income. So I would summarize them in the argument of stabilization, immobilization, and the bifurcation. On the other hand, some people pointed out fluidization or flexibilization in the labor market in Japan. Yuji Genda also published a very well-sold book on the instability of the young workers in Japan. So he argued that there was a sharp increase in young non-regular workers. When he published the book, there was a debate about who is the victim of the unstable labor market in Japan, and the mass media reported that middle-aged men were the big victim of the layoff. However, in reality, Yuji Genda pointed out, it's young workers who were the victim of the declining labor market. So middle-aged men were protected under the umbrella of the long-term employment practice in Japan, while to keep them in the, under the umbrella, the Japanese companies reduced the new job openings for young people. So young people ended up as non-regular workers, say working at convenience stores or part-time jobs. So this is an example of fluidization in the labor market in Japan. In addition to that, Eike Handa, who is also a famous sociologist of education, pointed out weakening implicit contact between schools and farms. So Handa's supervisor, former supervisor, academic supervisor, Take Kariya, wrote a nice book on this implicit contact. In Japan, especially high schools, vocational high schools, have established a long-term relationship with local farms. So they send their graduates to such local farms. In return, local farms accept students from the schools every year, even though they suffer from some recessions. However, because of the prolonged recession and the globalization, such local farms were not able to maintain such implicit contracts. So Yuki Honda pointed out such contract had become weaker and weaker. So this is another example of the fluidization in the labor market in Japan. So both of them point out how unstable young Japanese workers were. So you see some stabilization here and the fluidization here. So when I started my project, I wanted to have a theoretical argument with which I can understand these two contradictory arguments in a coherent way. So this is the question I raise. How can we consistently understand the two discourses which seem to be contradictory? So I would say here, social stratification matters. What I mean is that some classes are still under the umbrella of protective institutions in the labor market, such as I mentioned, the long-term employment practice and the seniority-based wage system, while other classes are involved in the turmoil of the fluid labor market or flexible labor market as part-time workers or dispatched workers. So the image of my answer to the question is this. Here, still you see a solid social stratification in Japan, while we are now a lot of anecdotes about people in the lower strata. I mean, homeless people, non-regular workers, transient workers, and so on. So, as I said in the beginning of my talk, mass media often report people in this area. But we shouldn't forget people in this part of the stratification. Still, if you look at, say, bureaucrats in the Japanese government, they are still protected under the umbrella of the long-term employment practice. So if we rely on information dispatched just by mass media, we miss this part of social stratification in Japan. Then, as I said, I conducted a large-scale social survey on social stratification and social mobility in 2005 with my colleagues. And today, I'm going to report some findings based on this survey. We actually made a 15-volume series of reports, and they are reported to the Ministry of Education and Science in Japan, who funded the survey. And we are now preparing for publishing books for general audience. So you will see the publication in a few years. So tonight, I'm going to focus on four areas: education, the youth labor market, intergenerational mobility, or job training, or you could say career development, and income inequality. So I'm going to show you some analytical results of the survey in these four areas. So first, let me talk about education. As I said, Yuki Honda pointed out the deterioration or weakening of the implicit contact between schools and farms. However, still some schools maintain such implicit contact and send excellent students to local farms. And Mary Brinton of Harvard University, who is also a member of our project, pointed out this finding. Those who got the job through the implicit contact, are more likely to get it within a month after graduation and to get regular employment than those who used job advertisement, say in the newspaper or something. So, still, if you compare two high schoolers, one got the job through the implicit contact, one got the job through the job advertisement, then the former high schooler is protected under some protective institutions such as the implicit contact. So the former high schooler is more likely to get a job within a month after graduation, and he or she is more likely to get a regular job. So if you look at the youth labor market in Japan, you see many young Japanese cannot get jobs, regular jobs, and cannot get jobs after 1 month. Maybe they spend 6 months or a year to get jobs. However, if you have a chance to use this implicit contract, chances are you get a nice job, regular job, just upon graduation. So this means there's a widening gap between graduates using the contact and graduates who can't use them. So maybe, based on the careers analysis, high schools carefully stratify their students based on their academic performance and how they behaved well or not. Then high schools recommend top class students to local farms. So top class students can enjoy this implicit contact while a mediocre student can't. So they end up at part-time jobs at convenience stores or somewhere as with a low job security. So there's a gap between high schoolers who could use implicit contact and high schoolers who can't. Then let's look at the current situation of the long-term employment practice, Shushinkoyo in Japanese. So first of all, let me give you a brief sketch of the Japanese long-term employment practice. Japan used to be famous for the practice, but it's just a myth. Not all the Japanese workers were not protected under this system. Only male workers working for large companies were protected in this system. But workers working for small or middle-sized firms, and especially female workers, are outside of the system. However, the system was so attractive among Japanese workers, somehow the system became a kind of dream of many workers in Japan. So Japan became famous for this employment practice. However, some social scientists, especially economists, have pointed out the weakening of the system because of the Japan's increasing exposure to globalization and neoliberal policies. So many Japanese firms cannot afford to maintain this practice. However, if you look carefully at the system, you see some class differences. Some people are still protected by this system, while other people are put in the turmoil in the labor market, free to labor market. So here, I wanna show you the result done by Nakazawa, associate professor of Toyo University. So he studied the stability of the long-term employment practice. So he did, he did some statistical analysis, and the method is sophisticated that I don't have time to tell you the details of his analysis, but let me give you two graphs here. So here, he compared suppose you get a job at a firm or the public sector, and he measured how long you stayed in the same job. So suppose some people stay in the same firm for 5 years, some people stay there for 10 years, but some people quit the job just after 1 year. So then he compared the sizes of the firm, small, middle-sized, large firms, and public sector. And the vertical axis is a kind of probability to stay in the same firm. So the middle firm is the reference point. And if you look at this graph for male workers, you see the big value here at the private sector and the large company. This means male workers in the public sector and working for the large firm are more likely to stay in the same job than than workers working for middle-sized companies and small-sized companies. This means still we have stable long-term employment practice in large firms and public sector. But if you work for the small firms and middle-sized firms, chances are you quit faster than those who work for the large firms and in the public sector. And you see the similar pattern here for female workers, but you see another segregation, gender segregation. So female workers working in the public sector are more likely to quit faster than their male counterparts. So still, you see two effects here. One is the firm size effect on the long-term employment practice. The second one is the gender effect on the long-term employment practice. So you see still male workers working in the public sector and the large firms are protected by the long-term employment practice. Then here, he did another interesting analysis, focusing just on workers in the public sector. And he divided the workers by the entry cohort. This means when they entered the public sector, when they get the first job in ministries or the city halls or public job, then he compared four cohorts who got the job before 1963, between 1974 to 1991, and after 1992. Then after 1992 is the reference point. Then you see the declining pattern here. This means younger cohorts, I mean workers in the public sector who entered the sector recently, are more likely to stick to the sector. So they wouldn't change jobs compared to older cohorts. So this means younger workers who got the first job in the public sector stick to the long-term employment practice than older workers in the public sector. This means, my interpretation of this result is that because the Japanese labor market is terrible now, once you leave the public sector, chances are you get a job as a part-time worker or a transient worker. So they have no choice but to stay in the public sector. So, but as you see here, if you stay in the public sector, you are safe. You are protected by the long-term employment practice. So they have no choice but to stay in the public sector as long as they want to have a stable job. So this is the one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is here. You see the gap between the young workers and the LTE stands for the long-term employment practice. So you see the gap or inequality between young workers under the long-term employment practice and young workers in unstable employment. So once you get a job in the public sector, it's okay. But as you may know, it's important, not important, but fast jobs have a very strong effect on your career development in Japan. So once you fail to get a stable job as a first job, it's very difficult to get a stable job afterward. So in Japan, so you may have heard about it, but mass media often reported that is, once you cannot get a regular job as your first job, it's very difficult to get into the core of the labor market. I mean, the regular jobs. You circulate in the periphery of the labor market as transient workers or part-time workers. So it's very important to get a regular job as the first job in Japan. So once you get the first job in the public sector, it's okay. But as you know, now the number of regular jobs for the first jobs has been shrinking. So many young workers cannot get regular jobs. They end up at part-time workers. So you see some gap, widening gap between the young workers under the umbrella of the long-term employment practice and the young workers in the unstable employment. In addition to that, many findings in the study of stratification and inequality point out here, well-educated workers are more likely to enter large firms and the public sector than less educated workers. So here again, we have some discriminatory effect of education on employment. So my speculation is this, that the widening inequality between young, well-educated workers and less educated workers in terms of long-term employment practice and job security. So as I said, mass media often reports and these people, less educated people, who can't get a regular job, so they become part-time workers or dispatched workers, and they are fired, and they lost their housing, and so on. However, there are other classes of young workers who enjoy a stable job security. Here again, I pointed out that the differential entry to the long-term employment practice by education, and education still matters for this point. First of all, as Mary Brinta and Hirata pointed out, well-educated people are more likely to enter regular employment, or as I said, high schoolers, not only high schoolers, but anyway, graduate who could use the implicit contact between schools and firm are more likely to get regular employment at their first jobs. And Hirata also pointed out the influence of the prolonged recession in Japan have a differential effect on young people. So if you are well-educated, the impact is not so severe. However, if you are less educated, you are involved. You are involved in the turmoil of the labor market because of caused by the prolonged recession. So you see some educational difference here. And Iwai, Shiro Iwai of Kyoto University also points out a very interesting finding on the early career of young female workers. Let me share his result. So here, the vertical axis is, I'm sorry for this messy character, but this shows a percentage of regular and non-regular workers by education. So this is the percentage of regular workers and non-regular workers by education and birth cohort. So this cohort is the youngest cohort. They are born between 1975 and 79. And he compared these birth cohorts and by education. For example, here, this is the percentage of regular workers of college graduates here. You see an increase here, but you see some decrease here. Then, if you compare these three lines, you see the difference by education. This is, as I pointed out, the percentage of regular workers of college graduates, and this is of junior college graduate, and this is of high school graduate. Then you see some decline here. However, if you look at non-regular workers, I mean part-time workers, transient workers, and dispatched workers, and you see the trend by education, then here, if you look at this, maybe brown or red, maroon line, maybe brown. So this is the percentage of non-regular workers, high schoolers, high school graduates. And this light blue line is for percentage of non-regular workers and junior college graduates. Then you've seen an increase here for younger cohort. However, you've seen a decline in the percentage of non-regular workers of college graduates. So if you look at this part, if you look at the youngest cohort, you see an educational inequality here. If you graduate from college, chances are you can get a regular job. However, high school graduates and the junior college graduates face some increasing difficulties in getting regular jobs. So they end up as non-regular workers here. So before, you don't see such educational inequality, but if you look at the youngest cohort, you see the increasing educational inequality between college and high school and junior college. So the bottom line is here. We see increasing non-regular employment and the fluidization of employment in the youth labor market observed in a particular area of the market, that is, less educated workers in the periphery of the market. I mean, in the periphery is that non-regular workers, part-time workers, transient workers, and dispatched workers. As I pointed out, as you know, not only Japan, but in many advanced societies, you see the dual structure in the labor market, the core and the periphery in the labor market. And the core is dominated by regular workers with high job security. But in the periphery, you see a lot of non-regular workers, part-time, transient, and dispatched workers. So here, as I said, mass media has pointed out a lot of anecdotes on increase in non-regular workers. However, it's just a part of the story. The whole story is this. You see some well-educated people who are protected by the long-term employment practice, and they have regular employment, and they have high job security. Meanwhile, you see some people, less educated workers, young workers, who can't get regular jobs. So they have to do some part-time jobs. So you see the widening gap between well-educated young people and less educated young people in Japan. Then let's move on to the job changing or intergenerational mobility or career development. So here, again, let's look at long-term employment practice in Japan. As I pointed out, many social scientists have pointed out declining in the practice. That's true, but you see some difference between large firms and small firms. A member of our project, Inada, did a good job of pointing it out. So he argues there's a heterogeneous change in the long-term employment practice. That is, in general, as I said, the percentage of workers under the long-term employment practice has been decreasing. However, so in the general picture, suppose this is the timeline, and this is the percentage of workers under the umbrella. So in general, you see some declining in the percentage of workers in the long-term employment practice. However, the declining speed are different for large firms and small firms. So the decreasing rate in large firms is lower than that, than that in small and middle-sized firms. So the percentage is shrinking faster in small and middle-sized firms, while still many workers in the large firms are protected by the practice. Then another point is that the segregation against non-regular workers and female workers. Hirata points out that non-regular workers and female workers tend to leave their first job earlier than regular workers and male workers, which is quite common or obvious in the labor market in Japan. But Hirata reconfirmed this fact again in 2005. Then here again, education comes into the picture. My grad student, Hayashi, calculated the differential influence of education on decrease in income associated with changing job. This means we asked the respondents the change in the income whenever they changed jobs. Of course, they can't record the exact amount of income. So we asked, did your income increase, decrease, or didn't change when you changed the job? So the respondent chose one of the alternatives. And Hayashi checked the responding pattern here. So, and he compared junior high graduates and junior college graduates and the college graduate. The pink line is for higher educated, well-educated people, and compared high school graduate and the junior high graduate. And this, I'm sorry for this messy characters, but these timings of job change, when respondents changed jobs, this is between 1956 to 72, when Japan enjoyed high economic growth period. Then from 1973 to 86, Japan had a low economic growth, and 1987 to 90, when Japan entered the bubble economy. Then here, from 1991 to 2005, when Japan entered the recession, then you see this is the percentage. Percentage of respondents who said their income, their wage declined when they changed jobs. Then you see before this period, you see the well-educated people said the percentage of well-educated people who said their income decreased is higher than those of high school and junior high graduate. But these differences are not statistically significant. So substantially, there's no difference here. But here, you see less educated people experience a decrease in their income when they change jobs. And this difference is statistically significant. So in the recession period, you see the widening inequality, educational inequality, when people change jobs. Less educated people suffer the decline in their income when they change job during the recession. So what should less educated people do? So I mean, well-educated people can survive the labor market because of with their diploma, bachelor degree, master degree, or PhD. Then what should less educated people do without such diplomas? Then they rely on credentials, especially occupational credentials, such as the license. For you see, especially women, you see an increasing number of women who want to get license for cares, especially care of elderly citizens. So you need some license to do such jobs. So now, I'm not sure if this is the case. I mean, I don't have any hard evidence that credentials work in the labor market, but less educated people somehow rely on such credentials because they believe with such credentials they can survive in the labor market. So here, Agata argues that less educated workers tend to utilize occupational credentials with which to survive in the labor market. Here again, we see some educational inequality or educational stratification matters. Finally, let me talk about some income inequality. First of all, if you compare income by education, I'm sorry, by occupation, you see an increasing gap between professionals and people in other occupations. So I myself did some analysis, and a colleague of mine, Nagamatsu, also did similar analysis. And this pattern is confirmed, has been confirmed, not only in Japan, but also in advanced societies. So you see an increasing gap between professionals and other jobs in terms of income. However, I'm surprised to see when I see a decreasing gap in income between regular workers and non-regular workers in Japan. I did some analysis about that, and I compared the data between 1995 and 2005. Then the gap between the gap in income between regular workers and non-regular workers has slightly decreased over the decade. So there are two possible interpretations. One is that the economic condition of non-regular workers has been improved for the decade. The other interpretation is that the working condition and the economic condition of regular workers has become worse. I am prone to support the second interpretation. So, I mean, non-regular workers' conditions have not been improved, while regular workers' conditions have become worse, especially in terms of income. To be honest, my salary hasn't increased for 3 years. So even, as you know, I'm a regular worker at Tohoku University, but my salary has been stuck at the same level for 3 years. So I would say that the situation of regular workers has become worse and worse. And another point is that mass media often report the chain of poverty. So it's a very important point, not only socially, but also academically. So sociologists often focus on intergenerational mobility of occupations. As I said, we are interested in the occupation of children of professionals, occupation of children of blue-collar workers, and so on. We didn't focus on income mobility because it's very difficult to measure the parent's income. Suppose I ask you, how much money did your father or did your mother make? You may not remember, or your mother and your father wouldn't tell you about that. So it's very difficult to measure the parent income. But mass media easily report there's occurring the poverty, chain of poverty over generation. However, from a scientific viewpoint, it's very difficult to measure such income mobility. But recently, some methodological innovation occurred, so we can estimate parent income based on respondents' answers. So Takashi Yoshida and I did some analysis of income mobility over generation. Then we see there are two strong associations of income. So first of all, we divide the respondents into four income categories, the highest, the third highest, lowest, the second low, and the lowest. Then we made a matrix of the income mobility. Then we see a strong association of wealthy families. So if you were born to a wealthy family, chances are you become very rich. And mass media often talks about the association of the lowest people. If you're born to the poorest family, chances are you become the poorest. However, the strength of association is stronger in the wealthiest family. Of course, we see some chain of poverty, but in Japan, we see more of chain of wealth. not change. Of course, as I said, we see some chain of poverty, but we see more the chain of wealth in Japan. So wealthy families are protected from the turmoil of the Japanese economy. So here again, we see on the one side, we see increasing inequality and stability. So my conclusion is here. In Japan, we are facing the coexistence of stability and fluidization, or you could say flexibilization. So I showed you many pieces of evidence that supports my argument, but they are just descriptions of what's going on in Japan. We need a theory to explain it. So there are some possibilities. Why that, as I pointed out, there's an income gap, increasing income gap between professionals and other occupations. And some economists and sociologists say this is because skill bias technological change. I mean, you see a lot of advancement of information technologies, computers, internet, and so on. So many companies need very skilled white-collar workers with such knowledge. So they pay more to such people. So naturally, the income gap between such professionals and other occupations, people in other occupations, becomes wider. In addition to that, Nagamatsu points out that low-skilled workers' income has been stagnated. So they haven't enjoyed increase in their income. So you see the gap between the professionals and the unskilled workers. The wage of unskilled workers has been stagnated. However, salary of professionals in IT industry has become higher and higher. So naturally you see a widening gap between them. So this is a market-based explanation. And the sociologists, some sociologists don't like it because they assume there's some structure, some institution in the labor market. So David Grusky of Stanford and his colleagues argued the theory of rent. Rent is a gap between the actual income wage and the market wage. For example, if you look at the taxi driver, now, thanks to deregulation, their income becomes lower and lower. Before, especially before the Koizumi cabinet, taxi drivers enjoyed higher income than the market average because they are protected. You need some certificate and a license to become a taxi driver or set up a taxi company. Then you can enjoy the gap between the average market income and the actual income. So the gap is called rent. So David Grusky argued that now we see some creation of rent in the upper area of the stratification system. So for example, you see the CEOs of large companies in the States. So now many financial companies are going bankrupt in the States. However, CEOs get a hefty retirement money, bunch of money which cannot be gotten, couldn't be gotten in the market. So they enjoy a big rent. So David Grusky argues that some classes, upper classes, you see the creation of new rents, so they are protected from the market. However, like taxi drivers I mentioned, their rents are weakening or deteriorating or broken down. So still, some people enjoy high rents, especially people in the upper classes. However, people at lower classes cannot enjoy rent which they used to enjoy any longer. So this kind of social mechanism may be causing the coexistence of stability and fluidization. Thank you very much.